Blog Talk Radio.
Armed Forces, and the men and women of Police and Fire Services. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight's program is dedicated to a lovely young lady, April Rodriguez, member of the Pasco County Sheriff's Office, who lost her life last Wednesday to Sheriff Naco, a good friend of ours, and members of the staff and the members of the Rodriguez family. We deeply are sorry to hear about your loss. And our thoughts are with, and prayers are with you. We also want to thank everybody for, we've gotten quite a number of requests to tell Dr. Chris to get well. Dr. Chris is still down a little bit. He will return with us next week. They're going to do an echocardiogram on Wednesday of this week to see if they can't fix some of his problems. So. I know Chris is listening, but he just doesn't feel up to being on the air. We also want to introduce our newest member of our staff, Armstead. Why don't you give us a little background about yourself, and we'll go from there.
Hey, how you doing, everybody? My name's Armstead. I'm a long-time fight fan and soccer fan, so I am a guest on this show, but I'm from the Two Guys Soccer Podcast, if anybody's interested in hearing a little bit of about the world football games. That's another podcast on Blog Talk Radio. And I'm excited to be here and chit-chat. We got a huge fight card coming up tonight, so I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me on.
Good.
Cool.
Well, Ty, one of your favorites is fighting tonight, Ursulan Ilara.
Yeah, I do like Laura. I'm a fan of the Cuban school of boxing, although to some it's somewhat boring, but I'm a bit of a purist. And Laura is in pretty tough tonight by most standards. She's in against Brian Castano. Like I believe he's 15-0, 11 knockouts. He's had some pretty good wins. He's a very solid opponent of Michael Soro. Obviously, he's never fought anywhere near the level of Ariane Laura as of yet, but he, you know, comes from a great amateur pedigree. He's kind of sexy tonight. A lot of people think he might be the one to push Lara over the edge, specifically coming off of, you know, roughly a layoff after his win with Jim Herd. So, it'd be an interesting fight. Luis Ortiz is also the co-feature.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about his style of fighting, and what do you think the outcome is going to be?
Well, Laura's definitely in danger, but at his age and at this stage, he's going to be. First of all, he's never been the biggest 145 or 154 pounder. But with that said, Laura is from the school of boxing, meaning that he will school you in boxing. We've seen that with Austin Trout, a very good fighter. We've seen that, you know, in fighting several other fighters. Laura's not, I mean, he's a guy who he's fought mostly everyone. But he's coming to the time now to where he has to change his style, to where he used to be, you know, used to use his feet a lot, his movement. And Laura was more of a pot shotter. He would throw combinations when he had them, but Laura, he was more use his feet, his hard left to control the fight, and, you know, basically just trying to keep his distance in control. Nowadays, Laura is more of a stand-in-the-pocket, catch-and-shoot fighter. He parries and blocks excellent, and he'll return. He throws a little bit more combinations now because he's on the inside, and he'll open you up for the hard shot. With that said, that style lends him to more punishment. We saw that in the Austin Trout, we saw that in the Jared Herd fight, and I anticipate a bit of that in this fight. With that said, Laura, he's not an easy out. He's not a guy. If you're not well schooled yourself, then you're going to end up getting schooled by Laura. I don't care how big you are. He's just a guy who's really technically sound, fundamentally sound. So it's going to be, it's going to be difficult. But I mean, age catches up with everyone, especially a guy who. Whose style was to move around a bit. But we'll see.
Good.
Well, you know, real quick, one thing about Laura, you were talking about his style change and having to stand in the pocket more. That's why a lot of people are picking Castano, because Castano, though he's given up a little bit in height and range, he's a high-volume guy. And we know that in the past that has tended to give Laura a little bit of trouble. That's when he's been in his most exciting contest. We know that's what Jared Herd was, though he doesn't impose the same type of size Brian Castano doesn't. But he's a guy who throws a lot of punches. He's a guy who likes to apply pressure, come forward. So that makes for an interesting fight, specifically given what you said.
Mm-hmm. Good. Hey, another guy that you like to follow is Nonito Donaire. He's coming back in the ring on the 27th against Zoltán Tate. What do you think of that one, Ty?
I don't like him against Tay-Tay. Part of the reason why Nonito's fighting Tay-Tay is because he's in the World Boxing Super Series. He was able to go ahead and he was able to advance in a tournament with the win over Ryan Barnett. It was listed as a TKO stoppage, but what really happened is Ryan Barnett, I forget exactly what the injury was,
but he fractured his back. He wasn't hit. He just moved and hurt his back pretty badly. And thus, Nonito Donaire was allowed, of course, to advance and determine to meet Zolane Tete. So at that point, Nonito Donaire still doesn't really, to me, have a legitimate win at 118. Zolane Tete is a kind of a formidable task at 118 when you haven't really had a fight. I mean, he did make weight, make camp and everything, but he didn't have a long, grueling fight to know what his body he's going to do or how it's going to react. The fact of the matter is the Ryan Burnett fight was stopped in the third or fourth round. So, you know, it's a fight that has to happen. I'm looking forward to it. Nonito Donaire is an experienced veteran with a lot of guile. Maybe coming down in weight, he feels himself as the bigger man and the bigger puncher. But I think we all know Zolane Tete, first of all, is the tallest guy in the tournament by far. He's a pretty big puncher, too, at this point in his career. So I don't like Nonito in that fight, but anything could happen, guys.
Sure. What do you think, Armstead?
Oh, wow. I'm not abreast to boxing like you guys are. In fact, I'm actually just kind of listening to see who I need to follow coming up forward because I'm pretty much deep into the MMA game and seeing what's going on tonight.
And we can talk about that as well, too.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Definitely talk about that card tonight.
Sounding.
Wow.
Yeah. And why don't you go ahead and talk about the card tonight, Armstead?
Well, the UFC 235 card tonight is looking like probably the biggest card in the history of UFC. You have two championship fights, one featuring the main event of John Jones, who is arguably the greatest mixed martial artist of all time. You can throw lots of other people in the mix, like GSP, George St. Pierre, and Anderson Silva. But, you know, John Jones is 6'4". He has absolutely no calves at all, but for some reason his power is really undeniable. And his reach is really unheard of with his 84 inches. Yeah, which is the only other fighter who has that similar reach is a newly retired fighter who's 7 feet tall, has an 84-inch reach. So that's a big fight against Anthony Smith, who's been around for a while for a guy who's only 30, who has had 44 professional fights and can really, really bring a lot of power. Moving up to 205 was the best thing he's ever done for his career. So, you know, of course, John Jones is heavily favored, but Anthony Smith is always one punch or one kick away from really hitting you up against the cage and then grounding and pounding you and knocking you out. So that could either be a lot of fireworks early in the fight, or I could see John Jones just letting Anthony Smith punch himself out and then do what John Jones does, which is just smother you, get you on the ground, and hit you with elbow after elbow after elbow till you quit. So that's the main event coming up tonight, which I'm sure that's what everyone's really looking forward to. It's just too bad I got to wait till about 1 a.m. to watch it, but I'll try to get to it.
But you know what, the whole card, first of all, you know Chael Sonnen actually picked Anthony Smith to win this fight.
Yes, he did. Which is a very Chael Sonnen thing to do.
exactly. But what was funny was when you heard his pick was essentially that Anthony Smith was going to be losing, but is going to come back and land a punch. So eventually, essentially what he was saying is, John Jones is the better fighter, but I think Anthony Smith's going to land a Hail Mary. So he still sees everything we see. He just went the other way with the pick. But I think whole card is really good. The fight I'm actually looking most forward to is Ben Askren, Robbie Lawler, far and away. That is the fight I'm looking most forward to.
Absolutely. Robbie Lawler is one of the most exciting fighters to ever set foot inside of MMA, ring or cage. And Ben Askren is not. So it's going to be interesting to see who's going to be able to impose their will. And I love Funky Ben. I love Ben. I've watched his fights on
one. I do too.
He knows how to cut the ring off. He's an Olympic-level caliber wrestler, and he knows how to get you down, and his ground and pound is really, really, really strong. The funniest thing about Ben Askren, too, is that he looks like a high school math teacher. But for some reason, the guy can straight scrap. So I'm and he's funny as all get out. So I'm excited to see him.
He has the best troll game in social media history. Simple as that.
Sure does.
Simple as that.
He sure does. Yes, simple as that. Definitely. But also, you know, Cody Garbrandt's fighting in the first fight too. That's going to be a big fight because he needs a win bad.
Armstead, that's just what I was going to ask you. Garbrandt coming off two consecutive knockout losses to T.J. Dillashaw. Mm-hmm. How do you think he looks tonight? This isn't the easiest matchup for him coming off of two knockout losses, specifically since Munhoz, I always pronounce his name incorrectly. He's
yeah.
coming off two consecutive wins. How do you like
right.
this fight playing out?
This was probably the hardest one for me to pick. I think Garbrandt will – I think he's going – if he calms down, because if you saw the second Dillashaw
right.
fight, he spent the whole time trying to knock him out. He just kept throwing haymaker after haymaker after haymaker. And
yeah.
Dillashaw is a smart fighter who knew he was in his head already. And, you know, Cody can get too amped up. He was shaking, he was vibrating. And if he can settle himself down, if he can just come out there, throw some good punches, you know, establish your jab, try to get some dirty boxing in there, then and also let the fight come to you, I think Cody's the better fighter. Simply because Cody's also fought a lot higher caliber fighters than Pedro Munhoz has fought. Not discounting Munhoz's record, because he's fought, you know, but, you know, he lost a split decision to John Dodson.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, but so we'll see. But I got a feeling that that Cody No Love is gonna pull that one out. But that's gonna be a scrap. That's
no
gonna be a good fight.
To turn to the form he displayed against Dominic Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
The patient and intelligent, freaking fast acting hands. Love Munhoz has pretty fast hands himself too.
Right.
I think he can beat Pedro to the punch if, like you said, he settles his game down and reads
mm-hmm.
before he just reacts sometimes. Kind of, again, like he did in that Dominic Cruz. I thought his form looked really good in that fight. And I think
yeah.
if he finds that form, he wins, you know, pretty handily.
You see, once he got his confidence that Cruz fight too, when he knew, he's like, Cruz can't hurt me. And he was just tagging him, just like, I'm not going to go crazy.
Yep.
I know I'm winning this fight. You have to now try to beat
yep.
me. And when he came in, he was just hitting him up. And Dominic Cruz is he's a slippery guy. He's hard to figure out. But Cody got the better of him, and I thought he won that fight pretty clearly. So
he won it handily. And
yeah.
You know what else too, Armstead? It seemed like because Dominic is slippery and slick, Cody almost took pride in his defense and also being a little slippery and slick. Since then,
yeah.
like you said, he's kind of abandoned that and he's become kind of a firefight brawler kind of guy.
Right, right. And Dillashaw even said that in a couple of post-fight interviews. He was like, well, he figured out the first couple of minutes. He's like, this guy's got here trying to kill me. That's all he's trying to do. So,
yeah.
you know, he's fighting mad, and he can't fight mad. And Dillashaw just waited on him and said, all right, boom, 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 and then caught him again,
yep.
and that was the end of the fight. So,
exactly.
you know, I don't know. There's a lot of fireworks tonight, though. But even we got Diego Sanchez fighting, and I'm always been a huge – that guy is exciting. He gets in. He's had a long career, but he will. He puts his head out there. He's not afraid to get hit in the face. He's not afraid to get taken down. And you know, he can always get up. He can always push you off of him. He's not afraid to get you up against the cage. He likes the clinch. He likes the ground game. So I think that's going to be an exciting fight. I hope he wins. We want for us old guys.
You know what? Considering
that
he's had so many wars too, it's amazing that he's not a spent bullet at this age too. You know what I mean?
I agree.
You look at guys like BJ Penn, like it's so amazing he still has life left in his body, although not necessarily,
right.
you know, again, a contender in the division. But the fact that he even still
right.
fights with so much life and passion after all the wars this dude has been through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you look at it, he's had a lot of long decision fights with lots of striking.
Yeah.
He's had so many fight of the night. He's had so many,
yeah.
you know, what is it, KO and submission victories and stuff. So, but the fact that he decided
he's
a
guy,
lot,
the guy also
tonight,
going, he's
going
up and down in weight too. He's also
yeah,
going
he
up
has.
And down in weight, which takes a toll on the body as well. So just, you know,
yeah,
surprised he's still competing at such a high level.
Yeah, there's a part of me that hopes he wins and leaves his gloves in the ring. I'm kind of – that's kind of where I
oh,
am,
that would be awesome,
I am with him.
Yeah.
I think that would be awesome. Yeah,
that'd
you know,
awesome.
You know, you're
awesome.
you got your respect. You have universal respect. You are, you know, you're still, you know, you're under 40. You know, you've had a nice long career. You're not going to probably get back to the level of really competing for a title. So go ahead, have a good performance, hopefully get a win, and say thank you. And because he's fought pretty consistently. It's not like he's taken a long break either. He's been fighting 2 and 3 times a year since basically 2002. So it might be time to think about it. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What do you think about that?
What do you think of
fight?
Dude, I was just about to ask you the same thing. What do you think about that? Woodley is I know, you know, this whole thing about Woodley being Division One, and you know, as we're talking about amateur wrestling and Usman being Division Two,
mm-hmm.
and that being a level apart, and I don't doubt that, but I kind of tend to think that the wrestling will, for the most part, cancel each other out, and the fight
mm-hmm.
will take place mostly in the feet and on the clinch, and if
mm-hmm.
that, if the fight does take that narrative, then I favor Woodley because he's a little quicker on the feet,
mm-hmm.
a little bit more, and I don't think, and I really don't think Woodley's a great striker, but he's more fluid than Usman. Usman is
mm-hmm.
a little bit more fundamentally sound, but he's not as natural with it. He's still very robotic, and, you know, he's not a slow guy, but T. Wood is just a little bit more quick, you know, quick and reactive.
Mm-hmm.
And I tend to think if there is a takedown or a prolonged ground exchange, I tend to think Tyron Woodley is the one who sets up a strong double leg reactive takedown that puts Usman on the back. I don't necessarily think Usman puts Woodley down. So I favor Woodley by decision. Wouldn't be surprised if it went the other way. I think this is the first real high-level wrestler that Woodley has faced during his title reign. And actually,
mm-hmm.
quite some time, since Kevin Gastelum,
yeah.
actually. So.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. I think what Usman's got to be careful of, though, is that Woodley is probably the smartest fighter in the UFC. His ability to know, he can read your tells. And you saw with the Darren Till fight where he knew Darren Till was going to drop that left and come and try to come for the straight. And he just waited and waited and waited and caught him beautifully.
Dang.
And that's why. So I think Usman, I'm not sure Usman is quite prepared for just Woodley's in cage intelligence. Usman hasn't had a fight against a real striker like or someone with that type of striking power in quite a while. So you're looking at Rafael Dos Anjos and Damian Maia, those are straight grapplers. And if Usman's power and Usman's ability to keep you down is definitely going to serve him as an advantage, but he hasn't fought a guy with power like Woodley. And I agree with you completely that I think and Woodley's takedown defense is unbelievable. It's so hard to take Woodley down. The guy's got two tree trunks for legs. You see those quads. I mean, the guy looks like a defensive tackle with those kind of quads.
And he has very, very extremely quick, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think everyone looks at Woodley going, he's got that right, he's got that right, he's got that right. But, but don't forget, he didn't beat Till with that right. He set him up with the right and beat him with the Darce choke. So, you know, I'm favoring Woodley on this too, but granted, I wouldn't be surprised though if this gets to a decision if Usman could pull it out, because Usman is a decision fighter. In his last eight fights, only one has gone to it. One has actually been finished. So the guy's got that cardio. Usman can go and go and go and go.
Yeah.
So
we'll see.
It is a championship
fight. I would give
him
a slight edge in cardio. I would give Usman an edge in cardio, though Woodley's cardio is more proven. Because of the five-round fight. But I guess there's still a part of me that can't get the Nate Marquardt fade out of my head a little bit to a certain extent. And so I always look at that vulnerability as, you know, with Woodley. Also, I think, you know, again, a guy like Rory was always going to give him trouble because he likes to back up against the cage. And Woodley's Rory's going to stay behind range. But I don't see anyone in the UFC like that at this time. So he's going to be tough to beat. You know, he's 36.
Yeah.
Maybe that can be.
Yep.
You know, so.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if Woodley hangs on for a little while and he faces Darren Till again and Darren Till figures him out the second time around. Darren Till is really young. I just got a feeling like Darren Till is going to get the belt one day.
That's the question. 70?
Yeah, well, maybe not at 70. That's true. Because as you get older, that weight cut's got to be brutal for him. Got to be brutal. That's a big dude, Darren Till. I mean, he's a big dude.
Man.
So,
and he's fighting.
But the fight,
you know who I'm looking forward to on the prelims? Johnny Walker. Johnny Walker. Johnny Walker,
Johnny Walker, that last fight.
And he's taking on
Nisha. Yeah, but I think Johnny Walker's going to take him. Johnny Walker is I think he's under the belt. I think he's raw. I think he's real raw, but he was smart to get back in the ring really quickly because that last fight wasn't going to really give him the experience that he needs. He caught the guy with that back fist. Yeah, but that was a great performance.
And I like
but, yeah, he's smart to get back in.
Wrestler specifically, too, and I really like that he's fighting a guy who's more known for his wrestling, a wrestler. Something that, you know, to test his takedown defense. And, but what I like about Johnny Walker is he's got tremendous Thai, Muay Thai, tremendous stand-up. And he's a big dude. He matches range, not the reach.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, height-wise, he matches him in stature. He's the guy I could see posing problems. Of course, we got a lot of other guys like Dominic Reyes coming up, who's an absolutely phenomenal puncher. But I'm
love
really
Dominic
excited
Reyes.
About Johnny Walker there. Yeah.
Yeah. Johnny Walker,
guy,
you know, 6'6", 82-inch reach, too, 26 years old. He's had a good number of fights, but I still think he's got a lot to learn. And when he actually figures it all out, he's going to be dangerous. And he's going to piss people
he's
off, and they're going to do something stupid in the ring when they fight against him. With his with his mannerisms and when he's dancing around, he's stripping around and everything. Yeah, he's going to get in somebody's head, and he's going to keep doing it. He's a guy to watch in the long term.
Yeah, there was a picture of him, and he had on, like, a brown pair of pants and, like, a white shirt. And, you know, he's got that goofy haircut and the red suspenders. It just looks so insane. I was like, this dude looks crazy. I love this guy, man, because, first of all, he can fight. You know, if nothing else, he can just fight. He still just has to learn the game. That's what he has to do.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. He's fighting out of England. I'm not sure that's the best spot for him. I think he needs to either go back to Brazil or try to get with, like, maybe like American Top Team or American Kickboxing Academy or something. I think that would be big for him. Yeah. But
I completely agree.
Yeah. Have you seen many Zabit fights?
He's fun to watch.
He is fun to watch.
He fights. He's the last
fighter. He's fighting Jeremy Stephens.
Who's he fighting?
Yeah, he's fighting
That's
Jeremy
exactly
Stephens.
That's exactly who he's fighting. All right.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's either going to put on a show or get knocked out. I mean, it goes one of two ways. Yeah,
right. I think Zabit's going to smother him. I mean, Zabit is – he's got 6'1", fighting at 145. I just don't think Stephen's power is really going to really – I just – those Dagestani people, man, this is something about those dudes, man. Those dudes are just made of, like, bricks and mortar. So I'm not sure. I just don't see how he's going to be able to beat him. And the way that Zabit submitted his last fight with that modified knee bar, I mean, like, what
that
was that? You know – wasn't that insane? He's got so many weapons. I think Zabit's gonna finish him. I see a rear naked choke in that fight. I don't know why that's in my head, but that's what I see going forward. But it's gonna be exciting card. Yeah, I think early or maybe like mid second round because Stephens is Stephens can tire, and you know I'm. That body shot he took from Jose Aldo, that thing, that still hurt.
Oh, my goodness.
That still got to hurt. I mean, so.
Yeah, Zito and I actually, we all laughed at that. We literally LOL'd at that. Like, whoa.
Yeah.
So.
And I brought it up on YouTube. I was just watching the clip. And I was like, I'm like, why am I doing this to myself? That hurts. That stings me watching him take that shot. So, but
yeah.
I just couldn't help it. The way he came in with that left and caught him right below the ribs, you know that had to sting. That had to hurt so bad. Put him out.
And the way the punch landed, he left the power right there, too. Left the power right in his
right there.
Beautiful technique shot.
Yep. So, yeah, this is definitely the – this is if you're going to watch any card this year, I feel like this is the card to watch. This is going to be – I mean, of course – you never know, but with the names on this, and if you look at the fight styles, and but even the Tisha Torres fight, not much is known about Weili Zhang, and yet Tisha Torres has been around for a while, and the women in MMA, and especially in UFC, have grown exponentially in the past 5 years, just from the, you know, when kind of Ronda Rousey came on the scene, and you know people knew about Cyborg, you know people knew about I forgot her name, she's like an actress now, but you know. To see what
Gina Carano.
Then, yeah, Gina Carano. So people, where they've gone from then till now is really tremendous. So that's going to be. I'm glad that fight's on the main card too. I think that deserves to be. The Tisha Torres has the history and she has the support, and so people will turn up to watch her fight. So that's going to be a good fight. Granted, I don't think she's going to win this one. I've heard this Chinese girl Weili Zhang is legit. I haven't seen her fight yet, but I heard she is legit.
Well, you know what she does have is like 16 stoppages and 18 fights, which is unheard of for female strawweight. We're talking Chris Cyborg numbers. And she's got some heightened range on her, too.
Right. Right.
And, you know, Tisha Torres likes to, even though she's like a little, like Jessica, she likes to go ahead and kickbox. And
yeah.
I don't think that's fair.
I don't know.
So.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that stat when I saw it. She only has one decision or two decision victories out of 18 as a strawweight. Yeah,
you never see that.
You never see that.
Now, granted, obviously she hasn't fought the best competition, but she's done the same thing in the UFC. She's gotten stoppages.
Yep.
So, I mean,
yeah, she's 2-0 in the UFC with two stoppages. So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
we'll, that's yeah, so this card, top to bottom, is great. I was even watching the early prelims on UFC Fight Pass, and this women's bantamweight, this girl, she's 4-0, came out and just obliterated the girl she was fighting against, Gina Mizani, caught her with some punches. This girl stood next to Joe Rogan, and she was probably 5'9", fighting at 135, and had some shoulders on her.
Oh.
And then you saw the Charles Byrd, who's been around for a while, but Charles Byrd got TKO'd in 30 seconds. So they're starting off with fireworks already. So hopefully this will maintain.
Great. Hey, Tidy, last week you said that you thought that Tyson Fury was going to pull out of his big rematch with Wilder. And sure enough, Tuesday morning, it was on Fight News that he had pulled out.
I was going to say, I didn't need to be Nostradamus to predict that. It was just, you know, common business sense. The rematch wasn't signed yet. It was close to being signed. But the moment he signed with Bob Arum, and even more specifically ESPN, you brought another broadcast partner to the table. So now, obviously, ESPN's going to want the fight on their platform, and Showtime still wants it on their platform. So before they could even negotiate the fighters, they got to work out TV rights. So I knew that was going to be an issue. And I told you, the other thing that gave me some pause, too, as to that rematch happening, was the moment that deal was made, shortly afterwards, later that day, I read that Joseph Parker pulled out of this fight with Derek Chisora. And I speculated that, you know what, he's probably pulling out because there could be a chance he could get Tyson Fury. And this past week I read that, you know, Joseph Parker is angling for a Tyson Fury fight.
Yeah.
Not that he's necessarily going to get it. I think ESPN, specifically with Joshua and Deontay Wilder still on the table, ESPN wants to protect their investment. Don't know if they're going to have him fight a Joseph Parker, who is a risky fight, although I favor Fury to beat him. So it'll be interesting, but I think just the politics of boxing would lead anyone who was really, you know, reading the news a lot to see that both fighters, being Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury, would take interim fights before talks of a rematch would materialize again.
Mm-hmm. Yet it was, I guess, Thursday came out that Parker wants Tyson Fury, and he wants to do it sometime. He wants to do the same day in May for that fight, but I haven't seen anything else come through. But the other question I had, now you got Fury getting, was it 80 some large number of millions of dollars from ESPN?
large number of billions of dollars.
Jesus. It's almost as big as what's his name?
Canelo
the contract,
and
right,
Canelo deal.
From the,
yeah.
Well, the Canelo deal, but also now Triple G's looking to do a deal with multi fight with DAZN. They're just tying themselves all up, getting the cash while they can, just in case they lose.
Well, you know what, Zito will speak to this too. When you talk about Daz and OG and just having lost the middleweight titles, so you're talking about Daz and you're talking about Canelo, who's owner of three of the middleweight titles. We're talking about Danny Jacobs over at Daz, who's fighting Canelo. He holds the IBF title, I believe, or Canelo. He holds a title, nonetheless. It is the IBF title that he won in one fighting Sergey Derevyanchenko for the vacant belt. And then we have Demetrius Andrade, who also holds a title, also fighting with Dazin. So Triple G, if he wants a path to the titles or still a path to be the undisputed middleweight champion, he has to sign with Dazn. Not only that, but it's the most lucrative options for him. Obviously, the winner of Danny Jacobs, Canelo, is the biggest option for him because of Canelo. So that is his best option. He was close to signing with PBC. PBC would offer him a Chris Eubank. They would offer him a Jamal Charlo, potential 168-pounders, maybe a David Benavidez. But the fact of the matter is, you know, for legacy and for money, Dazn was the best choice for Triple J.
Mm-hmm. Z, bring us up to date on the Anthony Durrell match. I mean, it took him. He had to go 10 rounds before he got a TKO over Yeldon. What? Can you bring us up to date on that?
And it wasn't a TKO. It was a technical decision, technical split mm-hmm. decision, because he had a cut. Durrell had a cut.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Z?
I didn't see the fight. I saw maybe a clip or two, but it, from what I saw, it was a rough fight. It was, and that's what you expect from the ref. I saw the face off, and I forgot the guy's name. Pardon me, but I mean,
Abel Yildirim.
Yildirim.
Yildirim, okay. Yeah, well, Yildirim, he's a rough, rugged guy, but before he matched up against Durrell, he was most noted for getting knocked out by Chris Eubank, I think, in the third round.
Mm-hmm.
Durrell, and I'm speaking to both Durrells, they make fights a little rougher than they have to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's for different reasons, and I'm going to just speak to the Durrell that just fought Yildirim. He has that dog in him. He has that dog in him, and he's less physically talented than his brother.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and that's one thing. He has the skill to on a certain level to quell most opponents to a certain level, but when it comes down to it, he's going to try to get you out of there. And a lot of times that puts him in danger. And he won't adjust to that all the time. To be honest, he's top level, but he's a certain top level. He's not quite the championship level. He may have held a title or something before, but I'm going to say
he won a title. He won a title.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He has a title, but maybe now is his best claim to try to get that as far as that 168 goes, just because you have the Gale, the Gresson. Not sure if Eubank is going to commit to being there. And Eubank may be his best competition there right now. Groves, he's retired. You may have some up and newcomers,
actually,
right now.
Actually, the Gale retired this Tuesday.
And Groves retired. So that, you know, right now it looks like Eubank may be his best competition. And that may be good news for him, to be totally honest. But this is right now, Durrell, he's getting older, and he's been through things. And when you have a fighter like that, you have limited time. Limited time, if you have any at all. He's on the downhill right now, to be honest, I think. I think he's right at his peak, but on the downhill side. And mm-hmm. I don't know if he can be at the top of the ladder against a guy, a hungry guy like that right now against the bank, and maybe anybody else coming up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's often forgotten?
Not saying he won't beat
that,
Eubank.
You know what's often forgotten is that his brother, Andre Durrell, actually won a bronze medal. You know,
yeah.
I believe the same class as Andre Ward. He actually was an Olympic bronze medalist. It's often forgotten because of what's transpired during his professional career. Both Durrells had good amateur careers. Both of them are very, skilled. I think, for me personally, the problem with both Durrells is they only bring what they come to the ring with is all they bring to the ring. And in some cases, a little less. But what they come to the ring with is all they bring to the ring. So they come with their skill, their talent, and their game plan, but nothing changes. They don't make adjustments. One fight tends to fight, his adjustment is to fight a little bit more scared to keep distance. The other one's adjustment, which isn't an adjustment, is just to get dragged into whatever his opponent's game plan is. So when you get to a certain level, what everybody, and this is in any kind of combat sport, you get to a certain level where everybody is so physically gifted, the differences are microscopic and they're often mental. You know, Armstead was talking about Tyron Woodley's fight IQ. Well, that's what I always felt that both Durrells have kind of lacked, which is why when they get to, you know, face other elite competitors, win or lose, they never separate themselves. They have never separated themselves against world-class competition, not only. And I think part of it is, again, because what they bring to the ring is all they fight with. And in some cases, they lose some of what they brought to the ring. In Andre's case, he loses some of the bravado he comes to the ring with. But they don't adjust. They don't stick to the game plan. And they tend more times than not, if you watch their fights throughout the years, they fight their opponent's fight.
They lose discipline. They lose focus, to be honest.
Yeah.
And what it is in boxing and MMA, there's a time to fight, and there's a time to technique. It's simple as that.
Yeah.
And there's a time to blend it together. It's not – and I'm going to tell you something. You can have a guy who's faster. You can have a guy who's stronger. But if you don't know, have a guy who knows when to twist those hips to lock something on, to know when to flip that punch and leave that punch right there for a guy, or to leave that kick right when the guy plants his leg.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know, have a guy who knows when to do things. I mean, a how, yes, how is good, but you can have a guy who knows how on the mix, on the bags, you know what I mean, on the grappling dummy.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a guy who knows how all day long, but if you don't know when, you're going to be lost. So, I mean, and I think the Durrells, they get lost in the transference of the hows and the when. No, really the when. They know how to do it, but sometimes it's a fight and sometimes it's technique. One Durrell, when it's a fight, goes forward
and
gets drug into the fight. The other Durrell, when it's a fight, retreats and seeds as far as the fight is concerned. So, I mean, they react differently to be honest. Kind of
one is too apt to fight and one is not apt enough to fight. And it shows in their performances. That's just to simplify it, that's exactly what it is.
Well, you've seen fighters win fights on defense, and by that defense, they're frustrating their opponent, and then their opponent, as you said earlier, either doesn't follow his game plan, or even when he recognizes that he can't fight his fight, he doesn't know how to make adjustments in the end anyway, and they end up getting outpointed from a fighter who's more technical and one who's been able to see what the other fighter's tendencies are and go, oh, I already got you angry. You're trying to turn this into a fight, but I know how you can't touch me. And then you sit there getting picked off for 10 rounds. Yeah, and you've seen that time and time and time again. And it's frustrating when you can recognize that in a fighter. And you're yelling at the screen going, you got to stop doing that. And yet they just keep doing it because you see it in their head. Their mind is now, their mind is too focused on, I'm going to tear this person up, as opposed to remembering this is a sport. Even if it's a fight, it's still a sport. And all the training that goes into it is allowing you to be able to out-mental your opponent. They always say this is all mental anyway, man. You got to outthink your opponent.
And one
reference before with Cody Gilbrand. Absolutely referenced it before with Cody Gilbrand to TJ Dillashaw.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly. And if you notice something, the best fighters in any combat sport.
In any combat sport.
They're calm.
Oh, yeah.
They're absolutely calm and controlled.
Relax.
They control their body. If they do what they want to do, if they can't, then they panic. And all of a sudden, oh, my goodness, I can't. They get a little panicked.
Yeah, which is why I really think – I was going to say, which is why I think Ben Askren is probably going to win this fight, is because if anybody is calm, it's Ben Askren. So, and if anybody can get a little wild, it's Robbie Lawler. So I'm really thinking that, like, yeah, the guy who can stay calm, the guy who can keep his head, is the one that's most likely going to win.
And the calm the calm guys, they take shots better. The calm guys, they deliver shots. They see things. When you're calm, your eyes are calm. Your eyes, they can focus better. You can see things. You can react better when you're calm. You're not jumping into things like Amir Khan. When you're calm, then you're more settled. And one thing I always have to say is I relate to Sugar Ray Leonard to this. That Sugar Ray Leonard and even Hector Camacho, those are probably two guys with the quickest hand speed, controlled hand speed. Not hand speed that's going to go all over the place, but controlled place where they can have the hand speed, blazing hand speed, but control the velocity and the placement of their punches. And that comes with a calm. Speed is speed, but I've seen plenty of those guys who are blinding hand speed, but at the same time, have that hand speed and effective as far as your punch placement, that's different. That is different.
Yeah.
So,
in the calmness. Yeah, you see it in MMA a lot. You see a guy fighting on some lower cards who has great hand speed and throws big punches and has big power and may score some nice early round knockouts. He's getting knockouts in a minute or two, but then they step up a level of competition and they have not adjusted. And all of a sudden you're like, hey, whatever happened to that one guy who did this in that one fight? And you look and go, oh, wow, he's lost four of his last five. No wonder I haven't heard of him.
Unharnessed speed is one of the biggest curses in combat sports against low-level competition. It is the most eye-catching thing, and against high-level competition, it is one of the easiest things to read. People said about being calm and takedowns, and, MMA, but being calm applies. I remember Tyron Woodley early in his career, when he was fighting Paul Daly, and he was fighting Nate how he would go for the takedown. He's a power double leg takedown, very reactive, very fast. When he wouldn't get the takedown, he used to panic. That's part of the reason why he started packing himself up against the cage. And I was listening to Daniel Cormier talk about the Conor McGregor Khabib. Why even say Khabib's last name? Conor and Khabib fight. And one thing he said, he was talking about how Conor defended the very first takedown Khabib got. He said, well, what were you thinking when he defended his takedown? He said, I wasn't thinking anything. I just knew Khabib was going to keep chain wrestling and go to the next one. And if that didn't work, he'd go to the next one and go to the next one. He said, that's part of the reason why I say no matter how long and how long Conor trains, he's never going to catch up, because the more counters he has, Khabib has more takedowns to go to as he chains them together. And then Cormier said, my takedown percentage, if you look at my takedown percentage, is only like 40-some percent. He goes, but when I get my hands on you, I got you. And if you look at the AKA guys, they're not worried about getting that first takedown. They're worried about getting their hands on you to set up the takedown. So those guys always stay so calm. And it's the same thing in boxing. If plan A does not work, you stay calm and go on to plan B. That's the problem with the Durrells. When plan A doesn't work, they fight their opponent's fights. And that's the problem with a lot of different fighters in the different disciplines, be it Muay Thai, boxing, or MMA. They get caught fighting their opponent's fight when their plan doesn't work.
Cormier and Khabib, one thing about them is they have the confidence to where they're not worried about the takedown. When they guys do not get up. That's one thing about those guys. They tend to keep you down, and they'll try early in the arena. They'll try some things, but all they're worried about is getting you down around mid-round. Around mid-round. If they get you down mid-round, you lost a round, because now you're not just getting up on those guys. It's rare and special for a guy to get up on those guys, to be honest.
Cormier fight. When Cormier fought Anthony Johnson, nobody wants to get punched in the face by Rumble Johnson. I can think of a billion things I would rather do in combat sports than get hit in the face by that man. Cormier took his best shot, and he was able to get Rumble on the ground. And once he got him on the ground, that was the end. But you knew that was it. That was it. He got him down.
Yeah.
Rumble's
yep.
not getting up.
Yep.
You're not getting up. And also he did the same thing where you knew when he was fighting Stipe, he knew Stipe doesn't want to take this to the ground. Even though Stipe did that convincingly against Francis Ngannou, he didn't want to do that against Daniel Cormier. And Stipe ended up getting caught. But you knew if he got that single leg and was able to drop him on his head like he did Josh Barnett, that the same thing would have happened. I don't think that, I mean, what you were talking about is exactly right. Those guys aren't worried about it because they're so calm. They're so calm. And Daniel Cormier probably has, I think his chin is underrated. He has probably the best chin in MMA right now. In MMA right now.
Mark Hunt-esque.
Absolutely.
And you know what? Like, in listening to Cormier explain their philosophy on the takedown, they're baseball players. You know, they're not going to bat 1,000%. They expect to bat about 300. But the goal with them is to get in on your body. And then Daniel Cormier says, they want to take you down the first time. But they understand part of the game is they're not going to be able to. Their goal, as he says, is to drown you. Keep chaining together, and eventually they'll drown you. And I think that's why AK is probably my favorite camp in the sport, outside of the fact that they have killed Kane's career with training. But
and that's conditioning.
How did you think he looked to you?
Kane looked like a guy whose body is not going to ever catch up with his mind. I think Kane needs to think long and hard about what he wants to do with his career. It's a shame that he never – I don't think he had enough fights to really cement himself as an all-time great, even though he should be. Fact that he didn't – you know, he's blaming his knee buckling. He did take a shot from Ngannou. Mm-hmm. It really wasn't that strong. Kane's taken much stronger punches from that, probably in practice from Cormier. So but, you know, you have the guy – he has not been able to fight consistently – in probably 5 years. And he comes back and he says his knee buckled. He has a 6-month suspension. They don't know what's wrong with his knee, if he can even come back at all. Kane is also 36, going on 37. You know, you have to really, really, really check yourself there. You got to check your body and go, look, he didn't look that great when he was training. He didn't look that great in the warm-ups, even though he was hyped up, you know, but it wasn't the same cardio Kane that you were used to seeing. And I was uncomfortable watching that fight. And I was glad that it ended when it did, because I was like, I don't want to see him take 3 rounds of punishment, because I don't think he has the strength to keep bigger guys down, because he's the smallest heavyweight he's going to fight. I just don't know if he has the physical strength to keep the guys down like he could when he was fighting Brock Lesnar all those years ago, where you knew Kane likes fighting those big guys, and he'll get him on the ground and beat him up. I just don't know if he can do it anymore. And to see him to see what happened with Ngannou, let him fight Curtis Blaydes for one more time. Because I don't think he can beat Curtis Blaydes. So if that's the case, I think Kane needs to think long and hard. He doesn't want to go and be a 40-year-old guy who is preliminary carding when you're a 2-time heavyweight champion, or potentially being one of those Bellator fighters who's too old and needs to stop fighting anyway.
You know what? Right after the fight,
I have no. I love Bellator too. I love it.
No, but it is what it is.
Just worry about Kane. Yeah.
Right after the fight, I turned to Zito. Right after Kane's fight, I turned to Zito and I said, "I am extremely disappointed in his post-fight interview." And the reason why I'm disappointed in his post-fight interview is because he should have announced his retirement, because obviously his body does not have it anymore. Do you think it was a phantom punch, whether his knee just gave out? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, as The Rock used
doesn't
to say.
Matter.
Because what matters now is that his body no longer can handle the rigors of a training camp and the rigors of a fight. That is abundantly clear. And even with that said, you know the explosion's been going for quite some time. Remember, Kane had some of the quickest hands in the heavyweight division. He doesn't have that kind of level of explosion anymore. Other thing I noticed, too, is Kane has never been Chet Congo of the physique, right? However, Kane looks like he's lost a lot of muscle mass. Even though he's still, you know, weighing up the same.
Yeah.
Kind of like when Bernard Hopkins fought Joe Smith Jr. When he came to the ring, I turned to Zito and I was like, he needs to, for him to maintain the muscle mass he had, he has to actually strength train now. He can't just train the way he used to and maintain his muscle mass. It's just not how the body works. And what I saw with Kane was I saw a loss of muscle mass, a loss of muscle definition. And I'm just seeing a guy whose body is not at the class of athleticism it once was. And you're right. His body can no longer keep up with his mind. It can't keep up with the rigors of training in a full fight. It just can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
And like you said, maybe, you know, I think that's about it for him. I really do.
And I think he would make a great coach. I think he'd make a great trainer. You see how well Cormier's done from working with him over the years. But you saw that photo of him when he was flexing. He was doing his, you know, Yoel Romero flex. And I was like, dude, I'm sorry. My dad's 70. Yeah. He's got more definition than that, man. I don't know. That just worried me. It worried me. And to see his lack of pop on his punches, his lack of real speed, I was like, that's not Cain Velasquez. That's just not him. And if that's what a camp after, you know, the long layoff, when you've really had time to get your body back together, if that's what a camp is going to do to your body, then you just can't handle it anymore. And it's sad. It's sad that that's what happened with his career, because he could have been the greatest heavyweight of all time. But
healed for a while. He reportedly has not been injured for a while. It was contract that kept him out for the last, like, year,
Jeez. Yeah. So you know, he's got to think about the rest of his life. That's what I'm saying.
I've seen Kane in the fight. It seemed like simply this. Kane got caught with a shot. I mean, I think anybody would have went down from that shot. He got caught, and kind of was a big guy and a pretty good puncher, to be honest. Kane went down, and his knee buckled.
Diego Sanchez just won, knocked out Mickey Gall.
Are you serious? You know, Mickey Gall said he was fighting his idol.
Yeah, well, Mickey Gall. He hasn't been.
That's something to brag about.
He's still trying to get back his fight that he had against Sage Northcutt. But he got full mounted and then took his back and ground and pounded him with punches to the side of the face, and ref stopped it.
Hey, Zito, did you just hear Armstead laugh at a knockout? He's perfect to be our friend. He laughed at a knockout. That's what we do. All he needed to do was say, "Damn!" And he would have been right there with us. Damn, and then laugh.
Hey, you sign up for it.
All right.
You guys, we're right up against our hour here. Armstead, I really appreciate you coming on tonight and enlightening our fans. They've been waiting for somebody that knew the ins and outs. I know that both that Z and Ty, as you can see, know the ins and outs of the fight game. We're certainly looking forward to you to being another member of our staff. And
I had a great time speaking with you guys. You know, this was fun. And I love knockouts. I'd gladly be your friend. I'd love to be your friend.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Oh, man, it's been a lovely show. I want to thank Armstead for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
Oh, no problem. These shows are definitely in memory of Tom now. If anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call.
Absolutely.
First and foremost, I just want to wish Dr. Chris well. We're all praying for you, big guy, to come back. And, oh, God, I can't believe it. And humor with you, please. Armstead, it was great having you, man. It's going to be awesome having somebody to really talk MMA with. Enjoy the card tonight. I can't wait to dissect and disseminate it with you next week. Butch, Z, always a pleasure. Brady, we're thinking about you. Bob is our co-pilot. Coach Mel, keep looking over us. Everyone have a good week.
I want to thank Armstead for coming on. Z and Ty, you always make the show the best part of the show. This is the highlight of my week every week. Just a fast update on Brady. He just finished his basketball season. with a high of four threes in one game. So he's floating on top of the air right now. That and the fact that he just got his report card, and you know, I told you he does take he's in eighth grade, but he does take sophomore geometry, trigonometry, English, and history, and he aced it again. And there's another $100 going out of my wallet for the five aces that he got. But it's great. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation of Women, Police, and Fire Services. When you're out there, please let them know that you know they're there. They're doing a great job, no matter whether it's domestic or foreign. These people are doing a great job for to keep us safe. Freedom is not free. And every day we find another reason why might be time to retire or might be time to do whatever. But these people are out there day after day, 12 hours a day, 4 days a week, 3 days sometimes, trying to protect everybody. These programs are dedicated to those who lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Onofre Crispin, Lakeland PD, Chief Al Hogo, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Hillsborough County Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff, Deputy Delaware State Police Officer Sergeant Rodney Bond, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Ardith Hopes, Wilmington Fire Department, FDLE Special Inspector Vinny Galaccio, Delaware State Trooper Corporal Stephen Ballard, Kissimmee Patrol Officer Matt Baxter, Kissimmee Sergeant Sam Howard, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Bill Gentry, Highlands County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Clay Zerba, Clay County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Natalie Corona, L.A. County Sheriff's Office, and Deputy April Rodriguez, Pasco County Sheriff's Office. My brothers and sisters, you may be 10-7 at this time, but sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hands. Good night. God bless and have a great week.
Shem alek ma yilama, shem ahezah yilama, son ashen evorat fet, hakuig again ma yilama. In the field.
Dispatch in 1999. County Dispatch in 1999. County Dispatch in 1999. All units be advised, 1999 has responded to his last emergency. May God rest.